And I'm pleased to say that the violinist and occasional singer with Stackridge, Mike Evans, joins me in the studio. Hello, Mike. Thanks for coming in.
Hello, Steve. My pleasure.
Now, what's your memory like of those days back in the 70s when you played at the first Glastonbury Festival? What was it actually like?
Well, I think, first of all, I would say that my memory is selective and possibly tarnished a little by when I say age, the passing of the years, shall we say. But memories of Glastonbury Festival recently have been very good and very sunny because we headlined on the acoustic stage last year and played again this year, and they were both very good festivals. Of course, now it's held in June, and then the first Glastonbury Festival was held in September, which is a different animal, and it was a little bit grey and a little bit cold, and there were a few drops of rain, but then the sun came out and everything was well for at least a while. It was especially a free concert, which Michael Eavis decided that he let a weird hippie-type, musician-type people into one of his fields and provide a couple of portaloos and some free milk, and God bless him, it worked and it grew, and goodness knows what it's grown into.
At what stage were Stackridge the band at that time? How long had you been going for?
We'd been going for about a year, I suppose, at that stage, as Stackridge, and it was just up the road in Bristol, because the band comes from Bristol. Glastonbury wasn't very far, and so it was an obvious thing to attach ourselves to, and so it proved.
What was the origin of the band? What were the various members doing prior to you all forming together?
We were all involved in various different musical structures and bands and styles of music. Stackridge probably started out, might have become, or remained, a blues band. In fact, rhythm and, British R&B. But in fact, when James Warren joined and then Mudder Slater joined on flute, I joined on violin, that put the band into a totally different musical direction. Much wider brief, much more classically folk, slightly folky orientated, briefly a little bit more transatlantic, but actually that was very short-lived, because I think that by the time the band really settled down, we became very English in our, not only our approach to music making, but in our approach to life as well.
Indeed, quite a strange band, really.
Yes, I'd say so. I would say palpably unique.
Yeah, probably a good thing, actually, I should think.
It's a good thing and a bad thing, because all through the ages, people have tried to bag Stackridge and pigeonhole us and say, oh, they're a such and such group, or they're a such and such other group. And of course, being clearly unable to do so, they've been frustrated and they're left scratching their heads. So we haven't had a ready-made niche to fall into and conform to. So therefore, we didn't sort of dress up with pretty layered hair and stack-heeled boots and excruciatingly tight jeans back in the 70s, and we didn't do a Slade and wear sort of circus clothes, and we didn't sort of go punk and stick razor blades up our nose or anything like that. We didn't conform to any particular genre. In fact, I suppose... consciously, or at least, or perhaps semi-consciously, in more senses of the word than one, we tried to move away from anything that was fashionable. We set as our sights, if we could be the unfashionable, we could set a fashion for that.
Just casting your mind back 25, 30 years to this initial period of the band, what sort of places were you playing locally, and what sort of concerts were you appearing at?
Well, right at the very beginning, we were playing anywhere they'd have us, basically, and that meant, Billy the drummer had, Billy's dad, was very good to the band, very good to Billy and to the band in terms of providing us with a van, which we could travel around in, and a recording and, rehearsing facility in his back garden, basically a shed, but rather a nice, a better class of shed. And so we'd go anywhere that they'd have us. So we actually started travelling from a very early stage in the band. We travelled quite far afield, rather than building up a following in Bristol, playing the local, what would be now pubs and clubs. You didn't used to have music in pubs, apart from a tinkly piano.
I bet you played some memorable gigs, though, in those early days when you were travelling around the country. You must have gone, you probably played a few dives, didn't you?
We played some absolute armpits, but we also played some very, very nice places, and we met people that you would associate with armpit venues, and we also met some very, very nice people, and it's those people that, on coming back, we seem to be running into today. We've in the last two years or so, I suppose, that we've been actually touring the group as a live band. We've met up again with some people that we know from the past that were fans of the band back in the 70s, and it's all been very nice. They're a smashing, absolutely smashing bunch of people, and we're meeting more and more of them. Are crawling out of the woodwork every gig we go to. But the early days were interesting in the fact that, yes, it was we were very young, very impressionable, but totally inexperienced, and so you expected to play a certain number of dives, as you put it, quite accurately. But we then began to, as the band began to gain momentum and to gain a following, we played in bigger and better venues, and of course we ended up playing in the big halls, as you do, you know, the Colston Hall in Bristol being the hall in Bristol that we played, and there are other halls in other cities and towns around the place. But that was a gradual process over several years that we built up a following to be able to play in big halls like that.
I was fascinated to read in the notes which I was looking at earlier that one of your albums was produced by the legendary George Martin, of course, the Beatles producer. How did that come about?
George is a very English gentleman, without any of the unfortunate overtones. He has all the nice side of the English gentleman. I think he probably was attracted by the Englishness of Stackridge, and his son was of a certain late teenage at the time that Stackridge was going, and he was a bit of a fan of the band, and I think a word was had in George's ear as, Dad, you got to hear this band, Dad, and all this kind of stuff goes on.
What was that like as an experience, actually working with, I mean, let's face it, he is a legendary figure in music.
He's tremendous. He's a lovely guy, really super guy, and I don't think we were old enough to appreciate it. Speaking personally, I wasn't able to appreciate it, and if you like, utilise it fully as a person, on either a musical level or on a personal level. And it's only in retrospect one realises what a genuine geezer and nice and a gentleman in every sense of the word.
Okay, well let's hear a bit of music from Stackridge, and I have a CD here which was recorded. Was it last year? Oh no, earlier this year it was recorded, wasn't it?
This one was recorded at the festival at Cropperty, which is Fairport Convention's annual bash.
Well, you went down a storm, didn't you?
We did. Yes, it was. Well, it was a combination of good vibes. It's a lovely festival. It attracts about 20,000 people. It's not one of the bigger festivals. It's not a small festival either, in terms of the audience it generates. It's basically Fairport Convention have been running the festival for time immemorial. It's almost as old as Glastonbury, not quite, but it's got the same kind of atmosphere, I suppose, in a way, about it. And it was a combination of it being a lovely party atmosphere anyway, whatever the weather did, but the sun shone brilliantly for all 3 days of the festival, and we went on, I think, at about half past three in the afternoon in mid-August. So that was absolutely stonkingly successful. You couldn't fail if you play the kind of music that we play, which is basically sunshine music, I suppose.
Okay, well, let's hear a track from the album. This is Ruth, Did You Read My Mind? Lovely stuff. That's Stackridge.
Thank you.
And Ruth, Did You Read My Mind? What's that actually about then, Mike?
It's not about anything in particular, I suppose. It's not entirely coincidentally that the name Ruth appears, because Ruth is the name of my daughter who actually appeared with us, with a friend of ours, Nina, at the Cropperty Festival, which that recording was made at.
So what actually happened to the original Stackridge? Did you actually break up completely, or did some members carry on playing into the 80s?
No, what happened was that shortly after we finished the recording with George Martin back in 1973-74, various musical opinions were expressed by various members of the band, we'd been playing, touring very extensively, working very hard for 4 years or so, and the end result was the band, if you like, factionalised and split. And James, Warren, Cronwalter and myself left the group, and it's James, Cron and myself that are spearheading this revival, if that's what it is, back in the late 90s. So they said our music was 30 years ahead of its time, so we've come back to prove that, and I think we're doing a reasonable job so far.
So how exactly did you come to reform then recently? How did that come about? Did you all meet up one day and decide to do it?
Yeah, so over a period of time, not just one day, but Ruth and Jenny, my wife, were down in Portsmouth visiting Relly's, and they were killing a half an hour shopping down Portsmouth London Road or somewhere, where there are lots of second-hand shops with racks outside full of old vinyl LPs, etc. And Jenny was riffling through them, and she found the original Stackridge CD, the very first one, and she said, "Ruth, come here. This is your..." She opened it up. "That's your dad." She said, "Never. That's not my dad." He said, "Oh, come on, we've got to buy this and take it home." So we bought it. I think £8, I think it cost them. And anyway, it came home with us, and it vanished up to Ruth's bedroom and got played and played and played and played. And Ruth came down and said, "Dad, you've got to do something about this. It's far too good to let go." So we thought about it, and we vaguely kept in touch with the other members of the band, and we passed the suggestion around. And eventually, Cron and James and myself ended up with the people who were keenest on doing it, and so we've struck out and done it. And Jenny is handling the business side of things and doing exceptionally well at it. And she's built our website as well, being a bit of a computer whiz. And this is the way it's going.
Yes, we can hear them recording. It's going very well. Now, one thing I wanted to ask you about is the fact that some of your fans wave sticks of rhubarb in the air. How did that originally come about?
That very first Stackridge LP, which was resurrected from a Portsmouth junk shop, in our case, contained a song called Marzo Plod. Marzo Plod was a gentleman of indeterminate age who might be seen as the Stackridge emblem that you'll see around, a kind of gnome figure. He's a bit of a Rumpelstiltskin, very Methuselah kind of chap. He goes back to at least Elizabethan times. His actual date of birth is obscure, but around the middle of the 16th century. And he has had an amazing upbringing. And one of the things he used to do as a result of this rather strange upbringing was to thrash rhubarb. And I think the lyric goes, he used to thrash his rhubarb frantically. And this was taken up by our fans in the 70s as a silly enough idea, and English enough to actually do. And they used to bring sticks of rhubarb along and thrash everybody over the head with it.
Perhaps just the boost that the rhubarb industry needs in this country.
Well, maybe, yes. I think that Wigan, which I believe is the centre of the rhubarb universe, is could always do with a little ray of sunshine.
Indeed, there's a photograph on your CD of a little girl carrying a stick of rhubarb, so they still bring it along sometimes.
Yes, they do. Oh, yes, that was... she's sitting on her dad's shoulder. That's Moira. She's about four or five. She looks absolutely glued to what's going on and holding that stick of rhubarb that she probably knows nothing about. She's totally innocent.
Yeah, she's been brainwashed, in fact, Mum.
I think, I think Mum and Dad have probably had a little bit to do with this, but she and many others were waving rhubarb at us in the sunshine at Cropperty this year, which was very nice to see.
Okay, well, you've got these three local gigs coming up. What can people expect if they pop along to them? What sort of a range of music will you be performing?
We're playing a mixture of a selection of the 1970s Stackridge material, and we're playing some brand new Stackridge material. When I say brand new, the material that appears on Something for the Weekend, which is, if you like, our flagship album at the moment. That was released about 18 months ago, and it consists of songs very, very largely penned or co-written by James Warren and finished off by the band in studio. And in the live band, obviously, we've taken these and made our own arrangements of them, so they're Stackridge, modern Stackridge, if you like, up-to-date Stackridge. And it's a mixture of that, and as I say, the old stuff, so it's probably about 50% of each.
Okay, well, there are three opportunities to see the band over the next week or so. They are playing at the Folk House in Bristol this coming Friday, they're playing at the Riverside in Bradford on Avon on Sunday, and at East Coker Village Hall near Yeovil on Tuesday the 19th. Many thanks for coming in today, Mike.
You're welcome, Steve, I enjoyed it.
That's Mike Evans from Stackridge, and let's finish up with one more track from the band. This is a lovely tune, it's called February in Shropshire.